So I begin recording and we can call this meeting to order. We'll begin with introductions. So Josh, why don't you, I'll start with myself. I'm Alicia Sharmet. I am the co-chair of the Water Planning Advisory Group. I'm a representative of the Fisheries Advisory Council. Josh?
Josh Kanzler with the Southeastern Connecticut Water Authority, representing small utilities, and I'm one of the co-chairs.
Jeff?
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. Doug Gleese with the Middlesex County Chamber of Commerce here this afternoon representing the business community. Good to see you all.
Thank you. Pat? Carney?
Yes, got it that second time. That's good. Pat Carney, Town of Manchester Water and Sewer. An out of flow person. I do want to let you know, though, at 2:30, I'm probably going to have to leave. So,
Brenda Watson, Operation Fuel.
Corinne.
Grim Fitting, Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection.
Allie?
Allie Hibbard, Connecticut DEEP.
Karen?
Karen Bernaska, Water Projects Coordinator, Save the Sound, representing Watershed Land.
Len?
Hi, everyone. Len DeYoung Kleinfelder.
Aaron?
Aaron Buddhist, Naugatuck Valley Council of Governments.
George?
George Logan, Aquarium and Water Company.
Virginia.
Virginia De Lima, U.S. Geological Survey.
Chair Bukowski.
Jeff Bukowski, Chair of the Water Planning Council. I'm Vice Chair of PURA. I also have to hop off at 2:30, but it's nice to see everybody at this meeting.
Lee?
Lee Hoffman of Pullman and Comley here because Fred Klein had an unavoidable conflict.
Nice to see Lee Hoffman, though, isn't it?
Well, Mr. Vice Chairman, if I had known you were going to be here, I would have worn a tie. So I'm a
little. I don't have one on today. Good to see you.
Thank you, sir. Yeah.
Gail Lucina, Pura.
Go ahead, Dan.
All right, Dan Lawrence, Aquarian Water. Good to see everyone.
Martha?
Martha Smith, West River Watershed Coalition in New Haven. Also, I'm an alternate for rivers and watersheds.
Iris?
Public, City of New Haven.
John Hudak?
Hi, John Hudak, Regional Water Authority. I will have to leave at 2:30 today.
Dave, also known as Shrek.
Dave Kuzminski, Town of Portland.
Dave Kalafa?
Hi, David Califa, member of the public.
Bruce?
Bruce Wichen of OPM.
Tom Tyler?
Tom Tower, Metropolitan District from the Wastewater Rep, Water Planning Council.
And Betsy Gara.
Betsy Gara, Executive Director, Connecticut Waterworks Association.
All right, I think I got everybody unless someone moved positions here in my my Brady Bunch screen. All right, so the first order of business is approval of the December minutes. Does anybody have any changes, comments, edits to the meeting minutes of December?
Alicia, this is Bruce. I don't have any comments about the minutes in particular, but I just discovered today that the way I've been misusing the state's public meeting calendar to make other documents available messes up links sometimes. So I sent an email out a little while ago with an updated link to this meeting, and I will stop making that mistake in the future and hopefully reduce some of the confusion that happens, because this is like the third time in the last several months where document links have changed going into a meeting. I have diagnosed the problem and I'll stop doing that.
Thank you, Bruce. If there are no changes or comments to the meeting minutes, can I hear a motion to approve the minutes?
So moved.
And
I'll
second. Okay, second by Brenda.
Yep.
All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Are there any abstentions?
I'll abstain, John Hudak.
Market to prevent these types of facilities from running into the future.
Hold on 1 second, folks. Okay. Are there any nays?
Are you doing present? Margaret's present.
Hi, Margaret. Margaret Minor, Rivers Alliance. We were actually taking a vote on the minutes. Margaret, are you?
Aye.
Okay. All right. So moving on. Hold on a second. Let me get rid of some of this extraneous noise here. Under Water Planning Council updates. So one of a large area of discussion at the Water Planning Council meeting was a discussion about Miller's Pond in it's in New London. Oh no, not it's in a New London, I believe. Josh, do you want to give this? Go ahead and give the update. You know a lot more about it than I do.
Well, just a quick update. At the beginning of the last Water Planning Council, Tom Shack, who's one of the owners of Miller's Pond, gave a long background on the pond, and I won't get into everything he said because it's not really relevant to our discussion. But Miller's Pond is a body of water owned by multiple members of his family. It's in the town of Waterford, right on the Montville line. And for many, many years, they've been trying to sell the pond as a reservoir for a water source. And there has been, I do know, several lawsuits involving the Shack family and the town of Waterford and the city of New London over the years. And again, I won't get into that either. Just to say that there was a long discussion about it. And the Water Planning Council, my understanding, is going to reach out to other parties involved, specifically the municipalities, and get more background before deciding how they want to approach this subject. Does that pretty much cover it?
Yeah, Alicia, if I may.
Sure, please.
Again, as we said prior to the beginning of this call, we heard one side of the story, so we're going to go back, as Jess say, to our respective departments, pretty much at DEEP and DPH, to research what has happened historically with this and then reach out to the municipalities. And then at the next meeting, we'll discuss it further.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions? Was there anything else from the Water Planning Council meeting that was important that I'm forgetting that we won't hear from Virginia about?
I think the rest of the items that were discussed at the Water Planning Council will be addressed later in our agenda. You want to move on to implementation water or work groups?
Yep, go ahead, Virginia.
Okay, with all those people who have to leave at 2:30, I can help you meet that goal. The work that's being done by the Alliance for Water Efficiency, Mary Ann Dickinson, I sent out just a few hours ago the final agenda from the rates workshop that is planned for March. You'll notice on that there are a bunch of organizations that are co-sponsoring it. The purpose of the co-sponsors is that we are asking them to send the workshop information out to their own mailing list. We want to get this information as wide a distribution as possible. So the agenda that I sent to you this afternoon, feel free to share that with anybody that might have an interest in it. The primary focus is for the financial decision makers, whether they be in one of the water suppliers or whether they be in a town, because the whole idea is how we can how we can maintain the economic health of the supplier while still having conservation and conservation rates. And so that's the This is very weird.
It's not me, I swear.
Sometimes on Zoom, if your Wi-Fi is not real strong, it will mute you out or even cut your video off.
Okay, well, I'll just keep unmuting as I see it happening. Also, the work that the Alliance for Water Efficiency is doing on perhaps changing the standards for plumbing efficiency in the state, they have put together a one-page flyer which is being shared with the Water Planning Council. And we are encouraging the Water Planning Council to have discussions with the Department of Consumer Protection, because it's actually their statutes that control the current standards for water plumbing fixtures. And that will be going to the Water Planning Council this week. In terms of our work groups, there was very little activity because of the very hard to plan meetings over the holidays. And so I know that the Water Quality and Domestic Wells work group met, I think it was the end of last week. I have not gotten an update from them. The only possible bit of interest is that those of you who attended the Water Planning Council meeting know that they requested that we postpone our discussion of regionalization and interconnections because a very similar topic is being discussed by the WOOCs. And rather than having the discussions going on simultaneously, they asked us to wait until the WOOC process had completed. And so that's on hold. My guess is that it might be a year.
Thank you, Virginia. Does anybody have any questions for Virginia? All right, we can move on to the Water Utility Coordinating Committee. Dan, are you?
I'm still here.
Okay.
Just trying to eat some lunch. So right now we have our next, I'll call it regional meeting, February 15th. Eric McPhee and I and a couple of people are just coordinating the agenda and schedule for that and location. So that's going to be February 15th with a few details still to be worked out. So most people come through the holidays and you get behind at day one. So we're both kind of scrambling for that. So, Corinne, I did get your message, by the way. So,
thanks, Dan.
You're welcome. So that's all we have right now. I reported on it last time in the which groups we have and all of that. So,
does anybody have any questions for Dan? All right, moving on to the Interagency Drought Work Group. Bruce, do you want to give that report?
Sure. This is a good report to basically say the decision was made that there no longer is any drought in Connecticut. The group intends to continue meeting to discuss issues that came up in implementing the new drought plan. And so I would expect at least the next couple months or more, the group will be meeting, and the group will be also looking at the report that's expected from the IWG/drought plan work group, which looked at the implementation of the previous drought plan in the previous drought. I suspect some of the same issues will be highlighted in both.
Any questions for Bruce?
I have one. Bruce, you said there's no longer drought in Connecticut. Does that mean New London County is no longer in stage two?
That is correct. We moved everybody out of, well, New London County was the only one still in stage two. The others were all in stage one, and we took them all out. A press release went out maybe this time last week, would be my guess.
Okay. Thanks.
You're welcome.
And before we move on, I just want to say I do appreciate that the interagency drought work group will continue to meet and monitor conditions through the spring and beginning of the summer, because I know there are several of us who are feeling still a little bit anxious about, you know, the potential of, even though the groundwater recharge has improved, you know, a potential of finding ourselves in a similar situation in the spring and summer. So I appreciate that the work group is going to continue to meet and start working, continue to work on some of the issues and items, ironing out some items going forward. So,
Alicia, if I may, I just on behalf of the Water Planning Council want to thank the interagency drought group. Really, they did a phenomenal job, and we're going to be, they are going to be meeting in the future, but we're also going to look at lessons learned, how we can improve the make up the council, the mission of the council, and everything else. The people that participated just did a great job getting the reports into the council. Also, I wanted to give kudos to Aquarian Water Company during this, particularly in Southwest Connecticut, working with the mayors and first selectmen down there. And it's always a challenge in Southwest Connecticut because people like to water their lawns and wash their cars and everything else. But Aquarian did a great job. So
thanks,
everybody's attention.
Alicia, this is Dan. I just had a question. Sorry, Bruce. Are you aware of lower groundwater levels now? I have the same concern you do, but I didn't know if you were aware of some lower groundwater levels.
The last I looked, the well or two wells that I was most concerned about were right back up into the normal range. If you look at the U.S. Geologic Survey wells that are linked in the drought page, the one up in the Salisbury area had made a fairly miraculous recovery. I have not looked back at it, though, in the last, I don't know, week and a half since shortly before the group met. I can't say what it looks like today, but everything we saw seemed to be putting things back into the normal range. You know, with the caveat that we have a fairly limited picture of what's going on underground. But everything we saw was in the normal range and rising, or if some had leveled off, which some had, that they had leveled off at what was a pretty good place to be. So, you know, from the standpoint of surface waters being normal, soil moisture, you know, frozen soil is almost, is at field capacity. It can't hold any more water. Groundwater was up. Reservoirs were rising or were normal. It looks like drought is over.
I would agree with that. I was just concerned about the northwest corner. I mean, with Bradley Airport up, I mean, there was 10 inches of rain down, you know, this past year at one point.
Right.
So, I mean, I walk around and see all streams. The streams all look good, but just was curious.
Yeah, we really don't know, and there are some gaps, and honestly, we can't really hope to fill all the gaps because we would end up needing an awful lot of wells, but the information we do have looks pretty good. Actually, you know, Aquarian, Connecticut Water, Avon Water, some of those companies might have interesting well data, but what we're looking at, with its limited extent, all looks pretty good.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
A couple of comments, if I may. Assuming that the USGS is still doing what they were doing when I was active there, the manual measurements get done the last week of the month. And so in another week or 10 days, we should have a more general indication of what the groundwater levels are. And also in terms of looking to some of the water companies that have groundwater systems for additional data, the caveat there is that the USGS wells are intentionally located in areas that aren't influenced by substantial pumping. I mean, certainly there'd be domestic wells in the area of some of our wells, but it wouldn't be near a public water supply that would show great variations in the water level between when the pump was on and when it was off. And then just one last thing throwing out there, years ago, we had put together a proposal to, let me back up a second, the concern of a winter drought is even though the water, the groundwater levels may be rising, if they don't rise to where they typically are in the spring, then you start the decline from a lower level, and there's a possibility of it going even lower. And one of the things that we had proposed to do, and may still be something that's being considered, is to see if there was a relationship between groundwater levels in the spring and base flow in the summer. Maine did something looking at total flows in the summer, but that really didn't tell them much because it's just the base flows that are based on the groundwater, to see if there was some way, if there were a relationship between those two, then groundwater levels in the spring could be used to predict possible drought conditions in the summer. And it would be an estimate, obviously. Any prediction is clearly an estimate, but that was one of the things that we had proposed to do.
You're talking about base flows in streams, Virginia?
Yes, base flows in the streams.
So you're correlating like a reasonably close USGS monitoring well to a stream that's monitored in generally in the same vicinity?
Correct.
You still have that proposal? Do you have the correlating wells in streams? Or was that more conceptual?
Tell you the truth, Dan, I don't recall. I know it was definitely conceptual, but whether we had identified pairs is, I don't know, and I certainly don't have it.
I was just curious. Yeah, okay, that's fine.
and, you know, I've gotten enough indications that even though I cleared out my filing cabinet to only leave stuff that people might be interested in, I'm quite sure it has not been opened since I left.
Thank you, Virginia. Any other questions pertaining to the work of the Interagency Drought Work Group? All right. Now we can work, we can move on to the report of the Watershed Lands Work Group and discuss the report that was sent around this morning. Just a couple of things. The links have not been added to this document yet, so I apologize, but I just haven't had time to include those yet. But happy to provide other resources that people may have to put here. If Karen, do you want to, or Margaret, do you want to say a few things before we get started?
Sure. This is Karen, and I will start off and let Margaret say all the really good stuff at the end. But my first comment is to thank everyone who participated, especially in the last four meetings. There was a tremendous amount of information given, and between the links to the recordings and the links to all the slides and whatnot, we got a lot of suggestions. And Alicia, I would like to thank you for reformatting the discussions and the input that we received at our meetings, and hopefully put it in a format that is maybe clearer to someone who is reading it and seeing what the next steps will be. From our perspective, I think there's a couple things I would like to say before we get into the body of the report. First of all, there are things that and recommendations and ongoing discussions that the Watershed Lands Work Group has begun or would like to start. And they fall strictly in the area of the purview of the work group, and that is how best to protect source water lands. And what I mean by that is Class 1 and Class 2 like lands. We would like to continue looking at that, working with agencies, especially DPH, who we have begun discussions with on their review of major projects on Class 1 and Class 2 lake lands. We would also like with DPH to look at, and other agencies to look at, the transparency of the process of the review process and how better to educate and get the public involved. So that is one area that we have been working on for years, and we would like to continue to work on as co-chairs of the Watershed Lands Work Group. There are also many issues put forward, many great suggestions that came out of primarily the last four meetings, including legislative changes, regulatory changes, the formation of work groups and study groups and technical teams, and ways to improve the process. And many of these are strictly related to the installation of solar projects, major solar projects. And I'd also just like to say, before I turn it over to Margaret, that there is another item right underneath us on the agenda today that came from Denise Savageau, that I believe she sent to the advisory group, but also to the water state water plan implementation work group, on the creation of a source water protection work group. And several of the topics that we have included or that are included in the report from the Watershed Lands Work Group tie into what she is proposing for either possibly the formation of a state water plan implementation work group subgroup. So, Margaret, before I turn it over to Alicia to go over the report, I'm going to turn the floor over to you.
Okay. I think you've said everything. I'll underline that we had a couple of different kinds of projects come to us. The Hamden, and I don't think in the end it's going to be just solar facilities, but it is now. The Hamden project clearly was something for our work group, and the Candlewood Mountain project clearly is not. So, I mean, we're a source water lands work group. That's our business. The second thing I'd like to mention is that we don't often sort of simultaneously talk to both agencies involved in a project. And often DEEP has responsibilities as well as DPH. And we tend to sort of seesaw back and forth and talk to DPH for a while on one topic and talk to DEEP for a while on another. And we're here in the Water Planning Council, so I just wanted to propose that we look for opportunities to integrate these discussions when it does make sense. And that's about what I have to say.
And I'm gonna add one thing that I forgot, Alicia. One of the things that I think I would like to see, come out of this, is that the report and the recommendations go directly to the Water Planning Council. The suggestions and the concerns raised and the recommendations go beyond the Watershed Lands Work Group. Many of them maybe can be discussed further here in the advisory group, but many, I believe, should go at least for review and to the Water Planning Council, because they take into account not just the four agencies on the represented on the Water Planning Council, but we've also had comments on the Connecticut Siting Council application form. We've got several comments made on legislative changes. So lots of good information contained. And I would like to see it move forward. And right now we're at the point of deciding what the advisory group would like to do with the report, and if any recommendations out of it that they would like to make to the Water Planning Council.
Thank you, Karen. Good thing is, as far as the recommendations go here, the next step is in considerations. I didn't see any of these that needed any conflict resolution. I think that many of the people making recommendations were sort of saying the same thing, is that we need to, there are a couple of things that we've that folks have identified that might be able to be a near-term solution, but certainly this is going to take a lot more discussion and the formation of another work group to look at this, both examine some of the things that pertain to drinking water shed lands, but also to look at the issue more broadly as it pertains to our water resources. So that being said, is there anyone that has any comments, thoughts, edits? And now that I'm sharing my screen, I can't always see if has their hand raised. So
this is Margaret. It's a question, really. Some recommendations, I don't know which ones you're speaking of, some are like very simple, like the siting council applications should include information on whether it's in a source water watershed or not. And then others might be very general, such as links between energy projects and water resources, what you want to look. So I wasn't sure which you were referring to for what in what category.
I don't understand the question, Margaret.
I understood you to say that you thought some recommendations would need a lot more discussion, and I wasn't sure which ones those were, as opposed to pretty simple kind of, I think, yes or no. For example, should the siting council get information on whether a project is in a source water watershed or not? Maybe I didn't understand your statement, but that was what I heard. Some questions, some recommendations need a lot of discussion. True, I completely agree. And I'm just wondering, is there another category of recommendations that have been discussed quite a lot and might be ready to go forward with less discussion?
Well, yeah, I think there are. We can certainly highlight the recommendations that the advisory group, if we can have consensus on a few items that are very specific, that are actionable, we can certainly highlight those in what we send over to the Water Planning Council for them to take under consideration as to how, if that's something that they think would be a consensus item for the Water Planning Council as well. Does that answer your question, Margaret?
It does. I just said if it's going to take 1 year to discuss the large issues, do we have to wait the year before we send this along the smaller recommendations?
I hope not.
Okay.
But that ultimately is going to be up to the Water Planning Council. It's going to be up to us to, if we decide to make specific recommendations for you, should, asking them to possibly consider something as something that could be actionable in the more near term.
Okay, thanks.
Alicia, I just had a couple of quick comments.
Sure, go ahead, John.
I like the way you formatted the document. Reformatted, and it does show some individual thoughts and comments from different people in the group, which is good because we're a pretty diverse organization. And I like the fact that we seem to converging on something. I just had a question. There's two sets of recommendations, I think, if I'm reading this right. One is items that are under the work group purview, and then there's other. You might want to come up with a better title than others. I just thought
I am open to something because I thought about it and I couldn't come up with anything.
But or not in watershed lands work group purview might be a good one. something more descriptive.
Yeah, I agree.
I want to ask what criteria did you use to separate those two?
Well, as you can see, some recommendations are under both. Because I think I separated them out myself just to try to ensure that they were specific to each under each category. But it was really a judgment call on my part. And if anyone disagrees, I am open to some suggestions.
Alicia, this is Denise, and I'm sorry I've missed some of the conversation. My Wi-Fi is acting up today, so I've been in and out. But obviously the next topic is, should we have a source water protection work group? And I was very aware of the work that the working land folks were doing. And it kind of is an overlap, obviously. And so one of the things that we probably need to discuss and maybe should collectively is the idea we need to be working on source water protection. We need to be talking about that, you know, in the way that source water protection and the Safe Drinking Water Act needs to be implemented. So one of the things I was looking at, is this something that we would just charge the working lands group to look at, and maybe have, you know, a couple of either subcommittees under that to do certain work, or do we need two separate groups? And I'm leaning towards, we don't have the bandwidth to have two separate groups. The idea being that, you know, originally the working lands group were really looking at land protection from the idea of, you know, easements and protecting open space and whatever. That's kind of where it came out of, you know, way back when. That said, they've really expanded that role to look at not just, you know, land protection, but the whole idea of land use and how do we do land use. So I think it depends on what we want to maintain as the role of the watershed lands group. If we really want them to focus on that land needs to be protected. So for example, the conversion, of land from forest to, solar sites, you know, solar siting, like we're looking at just as the example, but there's obviously a lot of land conversion that takes place and loss of forest land. Or if we want them to tackle the whole issue of source water protection, that really gets into stormwater management and a whole host of other things as well. So I think that's kind of a discussion that we need to have. And that's where I was looking at, if we have a source water committee, maybe just looking at the land protection side, the land protection easement side is one area. And then obviously, again, dealing with the polluted runoff and the other scenarios is another subgroup, although obviously they overlap, and that's why you have them all under source water protection. So I'm just putting that out there as we're talking about how best to do this. I think if we do charge them with source water protection, it would be good to rename the group, because it's not about watershed lands. It is about watershed protection, but it really is about source water protection if we're going to focus on the drinking water supply, which is what the watershed lands has always done. So anyway, that's my thoughts on this.
Denise, can you say more about what you see as the distinction between watershed lands and source water lands?
I don't see any from what they've defined it. Or what I'm saying is originally they had tasked themselves, the original concept was protecting lands in terms of whether it be protected as open space or having an easement on it and whatever. But more recently, they've gotten into the land use piece of that. So what I'm saying is, do we just rename them source water protection, but make sure that they are indeed looking at all of the issues surrounding source water protection, not just the land protection piece of it, because there's a whole piece of watershed protection that deals with land use, which is not just about the protection of land, but also about how we manage land that is developed, for example.
And I just wanted to insert, there are, the reason why this was divided into what the Watershed Lands Group, their purview, and other is because the Water Planning Council is not only a council established to protect drinking water. There are other water resources outside of public drinking water supplies that are impacted by large-scale solar based on the decision-making process that we have right now. I don't know if we're trying to make a distinction between source water and drinking water lands and how that should be divided up as far as the Water Planning Advisory Group goes, but just a reminder that, you know, this Water Planning Council Advisory Group should not only be looking at drinking water protection, you know, Water Planning Council.
Yes. So just to make sure we're clear, source water protection is drinking water protection. So that's why if we need a group just focus solely on drinking water, then that's different. What I saw with the watershed lands is when they said watershed lands, they were talking about class one and class two, or class one and class two like, they're using that term. Those are all the lands that are in a drinking water supply watershed. So that's where we don't have that distinction, with the exception, and this is a big exception. They also, if you're talking about lands, because people have identified at one time lands that were owned by the water utility, although those are called class three lands if they're not in a public drinking water supply. But as the watershed lands has narrowed its focus just to class one and class two lands and comparable lands within the watershed, those are source water. That is the source water protection watershed, and we should be using the correct terminology there. It's not class one and class two like. It's all of the land within the watershed is, you know, source water protection areas. And it just happens that about 20% of that land is owned by the water utilities and is considered class one and class two lands. But 80% of that land is in private ownership, and we need to be, you know, cognizant of that. So to Virginia's point, I didn't see a big distinction, with the exception of, were they going to focus on land protection? I'm going to purchase this as open space. I'm going to put an easement on the property, versus am I going to regulate land use so that the way stormwater is coming off of the property, or we're only going to allow certain types of uses in a particular drinking water supply watershed. Those are two different things, so we need to talk about them differently.
I just wanted to say that we did not digress, or we did the Watershed Lands Work Group, and I'm going to read this to you because it is in the report. The Water Planning Council Advisory Group Watershed Lands Work Group was established by the Water Planning Council in 2012 to review and determine the adequacy of current statutory/regulatory provisions to protect public water supplies and maintain class one and class two like lands, as well as comparable lands that are not owned by water companies. That is the charge to the Watershed Lands Work Group. And that I think you may have used that, at least when Margaret and I were putting our notes together, that definition is what we used to consider Watershed Lands Work Group purview and other, or we'll have to change the title of that. But we did not, I hope we did not deviate from it, but that was the guidance that we were following.
But I think we're also getting ahead of ourselves here, because it's going to be up to the Water Planning Council to let us know if they feel that they would like to see a group formed. And I think it'll be up at that point, based on their direction, for us to determine, you know, what that group is going to look like.
I disagree, Alicia, because I think we have to, our recommendation should be that if we want to make sure source water protection is taken care of, that our recommendation could be, hey, we already have a group that has this charge. Do we need to expand the charge a little bit, leave the charge alone? But should we be making sure that it's talking about source water protection. And the reason I'm saying that is when you talk about it in the terms we're talking about it, when you just say the Watershed Lands Work Group, there are people who don't know enough to join it because they don't see it as being source water protection. Even though you look at the charge, it talks about source water protection, it's not really the terminology that we use.
So are we saying we just need to change the name of the group?
That's the potential if you look at what their charge is. And I will say, and Karen, what I was referring to is there was kind of this work that was being done pre the official charge you got in 2012, where it was added in to look at more than class one and class two lands. But that a lot of the focus has been on land protection. So that was just my thought. I'm very aware of the overlap when I put in that we needed to do source water protection, but I was seeing that this work group was moving towards that, and I wanted to make sure that we brought this forward, that we needed to support this work and expand on this work that this group was doing, and how do we do that. We don't necessarily have to have a new work group, but we certainly may need to have new players on it if we're looking at saying this really is what we need to do for source water protection.
So then, I mean, should we look at possibly altering Dan's recommendation in next steps? I know others have, Fred Klein, who couldn't be here today, had recommended that representatives of the solar industry be on this sort of a work group that is right here under the next steps. I would, of course, add members of the environmental advocacy community to this list as well. So is this something that we want to look at, this recommendation, and either expand it or narrow both, or maybe both expand or make more narrow, or give the options we think would be most efficient for us to address within the advisory group, within the Watershed Lands Group, within a source water group that may be merging with the Watershed Lands Group.
Hey guys, this is Dan. I know Lori Matthew, she weighed in on that, Sue Alicia, if you remember, and I think she agreed that some level of techno group would make sense to try to sort through it, because there's a lot of people with a lot of different views, as Denise is pointing out, and many people have. But I don't think you can do this as one. So some level of group, I mean, I do think environmental groups should be in here. Otherwise, I think we all learned a lot of lessons through development of the state water plan and other documents, that everyone needs to be involved so that we get to the end of it, we have a solution that everyone agrees on, right, and has had a chance to have input on. So that becomes really important.
This is Margaret. This group, as described here under next steps, it looks, am I right, it looks as if it's strictly to protect drinking water supply, and it looks like environmental people are excluded, but I'm sure that's just an oversight, as are, I suppose, the industry representatives. So am I right, this is just for drinking water, and that the membership is rather narrow right now?
So, well, I think we all just agreed that we, expanding the membership, which I just was not, I didn't want to do outside of a group discussion, particularly without the person who made the recommendation here. And I think we've already heard from Dan that, this wasn't a complete list, but
right,
we can expand this.
And it's strictly for drinking water sources?
According to this recommendation, yes.
Right. Okay. I just wanted to be sure.
I think that the question here is, you know, do we want to have a group that is a bit more broad that is looking at both?
I don't know.
So I think those are two different things and two different actions within the state, if we're looking at the state water plan, or if we want to bring up to the Water Planning Council that they have the opportunity to not just focus on, I mean, the state water plan have the big emphasis on drinking water supply. And as I think it should. That said, it deferred to other water planning documents, such as the Integrated Water Resources Management Report, which is also the 319 planning. There's just a whole host of other reports out there. The Long Island Sound reports that are being done, the Long Island Sound study. So there's a whole host of work being done on non-drinking water supply watersheds. So if we need to have a work group that kind of sorts all of that out, that's, I think, a very different task. By definition, this work group that has been ongoing, the Watersheds Land Work Group, has been focusing on drinking water supplies. And I think that this next step that Dan put in is exactly what I was proposing in terms of source water, with one exception is, I don't know what, when you say technical group, I think everybody who's involved with Water Planning Council brings technical expertise to the table, whether it be from a planning perspective, a knowledge of legislative perspective, and or a technical, here's what the nutrient problem is in my watershed. So, you know, I think all of that is important, and it's pretty much what I've written up and why I think it's important. The only thing I disagree with is that there's a whole lot of recommendations that are attributed to the Department of Public Health. And in the draft that I put together, the whole point of this would be to get the Water Planning Council and all of its members to understand that source water protection can't just be the purview of the Department of Public Health. There are too many resources that others can bring to the table to help protect drinking water supplies that we have to get out of the silos. And we can't just say, oh, the Department of Public Health is in charge of the Safe Drinking Water Act, so DEP can brush its hands and say, we don't need to do this. And I've outlined this in the draft that I talked about, that, for example, when you have tools like the Inland Wetland and Watercourses Act, when you have tools like the 401 permit and the stormwater permit, and then you have tools like the Siting Council, all of these tools should be implemented to help protect our drinking water supply. And we can't just say, oh, that's not in our purview, so we're not going to do it. So that was the intent. So one of the things, for example, I wrote then is that what the charge should be, what are all the tools that all of these agencies have in protecting source waters, and how do they bring those to the table, and how do we make sure that drinking water supply is integrated into all of the tools that are being used by the four agencies and possibly other agencies outside of the Water Planning Council, because that is not the case.
I would just like to make a comment.
Just a reminder that these recommendations are very specific to solar, large scale solar.
If I make a quick comment.
Sure, go ahead.
When this new group forms,
is it Philippa coming?
Regardless of what it's called, I think their first task must be to clearly define exactly what they plan to do. And I say that, I'm going to state the obvious here. Every inch of Connecticut is in a watershed. Every watershed that we have is source water to some use. It might be small, it might be large.
Yeah.
And so obviously we can't be talking about controlling large-scale solar or any other.
Virginia, that's actually not correct.
On the entire state.
I just want to correct that.
Exactly what it is looking at.
When you use the term source water, you're using it as of the source of all water. And I understand USGS, but what you have to understand, and this is what we need people to understand when we're talking about source water, is it is defined in the Safe Drinking Water Act as drinking water supply. So that's why when you talk about source water protection from a Department of Public Health perspective and the Safe Drinking Water Act, it is specifically talking about drinking water, and that's the definition that people need to understand. So yes, there's headwaters and there's source waters generally, but people need to understand this term, source water, as defined by the Safe Drinking Water Act. And that is very, very specific to watersheds that are drinking water supply watersheds. And that's, and it's a challenge for us to get it out there because of what you said. And we all understand that watersheds are the sources of water for everything. But when we talk about, when you hear the term from Lori Matthew or Eric McPhee or any of the folks from DPH who work on source water protection, they're specifically talking about drinking water supply because that is how it is defined, for good or bad, in the Safe Drinking Water Act.
Alicia, this is Karen. We have a couple people, or some three or at least three key people who are going to leave in a couple minutes. I'd like to get their, you know, two cents on how to move forward and whether this is, and especially on this last topic, is it are we really going to ask the Water Planning Council to form a new group, a new work group?
I guess I'll take advantage of this because I'm one of the people who needs to leave at 2:30, and
yes.
I have very minor comments. The first is on the bottom of page 5, Alicia.
Sure.
There's a reference there to Appendix 1, which I think should be Appendix I.
Oh.
But at this stage of the game, I think you would be better served by linking to the full the general permit for stormwater for construction activities that incorporates Appendix I. Commissioner Dykes approved that on December 21st, I believe, and it went into effect on January 1st, that I know. And if you want, I can send you the link because that's all you're really looking to do. But I think you want the whole general permit at this stage of the game because DEEP is no longer enforcing what we've been colloquially referring to as Appendix I. Rather, they now have a full general permit that incorporates that as one of appendices A through J. So
yeah, that's a good point. And it is Appendix I, it's just the font.
Okay.
It's like Appendix One. So I will, like I said, some of these links still don't exist yet. So I will make sure I link to the full general permit.
Perfect. And I'll just send you the link, make it easy for you.
Thank you.
Because it resides in my Google Chrome permanently. The other thing is I'm a little bit troubled by what is currently labeled as Appendix B, which is a fairly rough draft of a report that is incomplete only because certain individuals, at the time that this was prepared, certain individuals hadn't prepared their offerings to the group, including but not limited to the Siting Council and I think a few others. And I'm not sure what the purpose of adding Appendix B, the rough draft, is to what is a fairly well-polished and balanced final report that shows the thinking of the group. I think that Appendix B winds up being somewhat confusing, and it shows that it's a work in progress. So I would think that we wouldn't want to have Appendix B there at all, and rather we'd want to turn in the report, which stands on its own.
I was going to make that same comment. Ooh, I don't think you need Appendix B. It's just an earlier draft.
Well, I will. I just want to ask, I believe I had told Karen and Margaret that I would have the original report attached. So I just want to hear their thoughts on that. I thought we had
One of the reasons that we wanted, we suggested what the report attached was to make certain that all of the, one of the reasons was to make certain that all of the attachments, they're all of the presentations and information provided to the Watershed Lands Work Group would be included in the report.
Okay, and so that none of that was omitted from the original, from what you had originally sent me. So do you still feel that we need to have the original report?
As I said last time, Alicia, I think this is a process question, and that probably we can discuss it the next time we're doing reports. I don't care if B is in or out, but I think we did have a bit of a process hiccup.
Okay, so there were actually very few changes from the original report. It was pretty much everything was just moved around. It can be deleted. I guess it was a matter of, for those who wanted to make sure that things made its way from the original to the reformatted version, they got there. So I don't have a problem with getting rid of it. I just believe I had made that commitment to leave that there at some point. So that's why I put it in there.
Yeah, and I completely and totally understand not wanting to leave good thoughts behind in the editing process and totally agree with that. But now that we're all comfortable that that's what's happened, I think it gets a little bit confusing because it's not, it has some of the same ideas, but it doesn't have all of them. But I think that it's clear that all of the main report encompasses everything that was included in Appendix B, just there's more there now. So I appreciate it.
I would just like then that the Appendix B remain posted as the document that was sent on from the group. Flawed as it may be, that was our final document, so I don't want to see it just disappear. I don't care if it's not Appendix B. It just should be around somewhere.
We can probably add a link to Appendix A.
No, it was a draft report, and that's why it was noted every time it was sent out as a draft. So if I agree, if it's confusing, we don't want to do it because there's enough in there. But if we can link it in some ways to the draft report, fine, a draft initial report.
The link, I've got no objection to the link, and I'll just thank everybody. And like John, I have to jump off as well. So thank you for indulging me. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I just want to say I agree with Lee that attaching it as the report, having it somewhere as, hey, this is this was what was submitted to us and we refined it to this is two different things.
Okay, so
Pat Carney also had to go, and he's been a regular at all four of the meetings. So Pat, say your piece, please. Maybe he's gone already.
Alicia, it's Jack. I have to jump off, but I'm going to listen to the conversation. I think Denise raises a good point. You know, one of the reasons historically the Water Planning Council was set up, we said we didn't live in silos anymore. You know, it's very different in 2021 versus 2001. So I think you have to bring more agencies into this process. And I would suggest that a recommendation today to set up another group to look at this. And as we indicated, and let's move, I mean, let's be vigilant about this. And I'm talking about ourselves as Water Planning Council, so we just don't sit around for years discussing this. We've really done a lot of homework on this, and I think we're in a good position to move forward and move forward quickly on this, because as we get into alternative energy sources, we're going to have this issue come up over and over and over again. So I would be supportive of setting up another group. Not speaking to my colleagues, but I think that's where we ought to be taking.
Alicia, this is Karen. Then I would make a motion to that the Water Planning Council Advisory Group send the Watershed Lands Work Group report on the siting of solar projects to the Water Planning Council, and also in a cover memo include the establishment of a source water protection group, if that's the correct term, that the Water Planning Council consider the establishment of a source water protection group and continue and allow the Watershed Lands Work Group to continue on the path that it's going on.
I'm having a hard time merging the source water protection proposal with this report because the source water protection proposal is more broad. So I don't want to merge the two subjects now, and I would prefer to focus on this report to make sure that, you know, first of all, we have some sort of consensus on any of the recommendations, and if anybody has any very specific changes to the recommendations or, you know, something that we're putting forward that they have concerns about, that they voice it now before we send it on to the Water Planning Council.
I withdraw my motion.
And I'm gonna sign off. And thank you for
your input, Jack. That was very helpful.
Thank you all. Thank you all very much for your work. I appreciate it. And I know this has been going on, and we have to. And you know that we have. It's interesting being chairman of this council. We have different views, but this is something we really, really need to do. And I know many of you are passionate about this, so let's get it done. So thank you all very much. Be safe.
And the concern, I just want to express two things from my perspective. First, one of them was already addressed in the next steps, where the makeup of the work group, whereas I would feel more comfortable, you know, making sure the work group would be as broad as it needs to be to make sure all the stakeholders are included. But the second thing is, and the reason why, and I know I advocated for the other section, which needs a much better name, which I am open to getting better names for, is that there were so many items in this discussion that I felt we didn't want to lose going forward, because outside of drinking water protection, a lot of these items are essential to protecting water resources in general, as far as, you know, we've talked a lot between the solar developers and, you know, the environmental community on how, you know, we would like to see better incentives for places where, you know, we would find where forests aren't going to get cut down, and or soils, you know, prime soils aren't going to be disturbed. So there are a lot of things that go beyond source water protection that I felt were important parts of the conversation that I felt we didn't want to lose, and clearly other folks didn't, because they included a lot of these either considerations or recommendations in their comments to the Watershed Lands Group. I think what we need to do is make sure that, you know, again, give people a voice if they have something very specific that they'd like to see go to the Water Planning Council. We can make those changes before they're sent over.
So the one thing I'm seeing that's a little bit maybe problematic with the report when I read it is that when you get to the recommendations, if these are very specific to looking at solar installations, it doesn't say that in the recommendations. What happens is you talk about that at the beginning of the report, but then when you get into recommendations, it starts talking about recommendations and items for further.
Well, you know, she
I'm sorry, did I?
No, I think that was.
Okay. So what happens is, if you look at the report, so you say the goal, and the goal doesn't really say anything about solar facilities, it's general, but then the background talks about siting the solar facilities. But then when you get into further recommendations, and then the working lands purview, and then there's nothing down below any of that that talks very specifically about you know, this issue of siting solar. So I think, and maybe that was why, and partly my confusion, because I was looking at that, not only it happened when we were talking about the siting of solar, but the whole discussion of, you know, took on this whole discussion of source water protection. So that said, just sending this in as that type of report, the one thing I would make sure is that, so for example, if Dan Lawrence is recommending a address to right for concerns impacting watershed and protection of lands, you need to say in relationship to the solar installation. There just needs to be some reference to solar installations in that part of the report if you read the report. Because otherwise it starts, you start getting into the watershed lands work group purview and recommendations for further discussion, and they are all more general about source water protection and not very specific to the solar siting. So I'm just pointing that out.
Okay, that can certainly be added.
Yeah, I think it's very simple. It's just adding the terminology and, you know, it could even say recommendations for siting of solar at the top, and then you kind of have that there, but it doesn't say it anywhere. It's the title of the page, but it doesn't really, I don't think it's reinforced throughout the document.
Okay, I will certainly do that. Are there any other?
Alicia, it's Len. Can I, as a member of the public, just a quick comment?
Yes, please, Len.
First of all, applaud everyone for the great work. On the next page, if you could scroll down to that, page 3.
Hey, Len.
No, yeah. Those bullets, what are those bullets referring to?
It's a matter of this not coming down. So this is the other. This is the outside of the watershed lands purview. So it's the more general, some of the more general recommendations and considerations that pertain more broadly to the discussion we had about the impact of large-scale solar on water resources.
Okay, so just a format.
That's the thing that needs a better name and a better, yeah, it needs to be formatted better.
Okay, thanks.
Anyone else?
See, the interesting thing is I think you put those as other, and those are the things that are very specific to siting large-scale solar.
But it's outside of the watershed lands purview.
Why?
Well, these are things that have to do with all water resources. So up here they were very specific to source water protection and drinking water. These mm-hmm. were specific recommendations that had those words in them, which didn't have solar in them. But these were definitely more broad, where you're talking about, you know, reviewing barriers to solar projects. And some of these were duplicated in both because they do pertain to both. But some of it is much broader. And yeah, there some of them are much broader.
Well, some of them are broader, but obviously if you're bringing them up in the context of drinking water supply, that's how you use them.
Well, that's why I said sometimes it's difficult to parse some of this out, but if we only focus on drinking water lands, then we're going to lose the other side of the conversation.
But that's what the watershed lands group was focused on.
Yeah. Yes.
So that's what I'm saying. This report is coming out of that. I think we could make the assumption that the discussion that they were having on these other things were not other, but they were taking them in the context of what they were talking about. So I wouldn't put them as other. I think that these are the things that came up that need to be discussed in the context of drinking water supplies.
I would like to say that I think there are some issues, maybe structural issues or conceptual issues, that should be further addressed by the work group, and also for the rest of us to have time to really go through and study this. I don't know if continuing this conversation right now is the most productive way of handling it.
So, Karen, you had made a motion earlier. There were some very specifics as far as changes to the report. Again, broadening the stakeholder group, ensuring that we are specific in the recommendations and that this pertains to solar, so that doesn't get lost in the recommendations and considerations. And as far as any other substantive or any other waves forward can certainly be worked out when the Water Planning Council has taken a look to decide how they would like to move forward. So did you want to make that motion again?
Just so they know, the primary focus is on solar facilities. That's what it says. It's not strictly solar. And we will admit that maybe it wasn't clear. At one time it was, I believe we had used the term class 2 renewable energy or, you know, green energy. What came out of this is, if for people who had been involved in these meetings, is it started out, the watershed land started out broad. We went to focus in on solar, but people did bring up other very important issues that whether they apply to solar or, you know, in general green energy, or as when we talked to DPH, they are concerned about not any project on class 1 and class 2 like lands that might have an adverse effect on the land and the water. I don't want to put words in their mouth, but their purview was more than just solar. What they're looking at. So, I mean, I'm all open to the group, Alicia. If you would like me to make just a general motion that they see if the Water Planning Council will accept the report with changes indicated today and approve sending it to the Water Planning Council. We can also, then you can have a whole separate motion on another group and any other topic that you would like. I'm asking you for your direction.
This is Margaret. In terms of how we describe the projects, I'm quite sure that we're talking about projects that are classified by statute as renewable energy projects, class 1, available for credits as renewable energy projects. So there's a statutory definition. It includes solar, wind, certain types of hydro, 1 biomass. So if we're not sure what green energy means or whatever, I'd have to check. Fred Klein had the statute at the top of his head. I think that's what clean energy and green energy projects are. They're the projects that are state listed as renewable energy projects and available for credits and other incentives. And fast tracking, which is what we get there. You know, they can be fast tracked and go straight to the siting, go to the siting council for the petition process, not a full certification. So all the projects in that part of the statute that are listed, the types, are eligible if they're in a drinking water watershed. At the very end of the whole process, they go to the siting council, and the siting council is requested to make a declaratory judgment, not a full review, although there's dispute as to whether the review is really a full review. But by statute, it is a declaratory judgment, not a full review of certification. So rather than tie ourselves into, oh, do we only mean solar or whatever, why don't we just refer to the...
If we're going to change the primary focus of what was sent to me, then I'm going to have to send it back to the Watershed Lands Group.
We discussed, and Fred gave the statutory reference, it could just be put in parentheses. Well, if there's a question about what we mean by green energy, we mean the problem, what we've been discussing mostly, or what I think we've been discussing, is energy projects that receive that are listed as renewable energy by the state and receive incentives, and that includes all the solar projects we've discussed. It's just not limited to them. But that's my suggestion. There is a statutory definition of what we're talking about, and Fred actually gave it to us at the last meeting. And I could get it for you in 3 seconds if you want, but...
Alicia, I would like to move this forward, but I certainly don't want to go move it forward if the group is very concerned or not comfortable with it. What do you suggest?
So, I mean, the only other place we can go from here, if there's disagreement about the primary focus about what this is about, that it the Watershed Lands Group will have to go back and reconsider. I think that there are some very good recommendations here. I think that that we need to move forward. We can bounce it around a little bit more, but you know, I didn't hear any major other than the things we considered and changes that would be made before they go to the Water Planning Council. I think that there are some other things that could be worked out later in the process that we can't work out here. We could table it. We could have some folks give some more input and then discuss it again at the next Water Planning Advisory Group meeting. So those are the two options. Those are the options.
Okay. I have to tell you, the primary focus was on solar. And the background information gave the reason how we got there. And that's why there was a presentation by CEQ on solar installations over the last couple of years. That is why Fred was good enough to get a solar installer to give a presentation. That is one of the reasons why Melanie Bachman, her presentation was focused on solar projects. But Margaret is correct. It solar falls within the category of green energy projects that are listed in the statute.
Okay.
But for people to think that it wasn't much of the discussion was on solar projects. In fact, the majority over the more than the majority of it, when they were talking about a project, they were talking about a solar project. I don't have any problem with this, the title of it, the way it is.
I don't either. I thought that's what we were talking about this whole time. That's why I just didn't understand the shift, because I didn't think anybody had an issue with the primary focus being.
Okay. Sorry if I added confusion with the statute. This is Margaret. I don't see reason for it to go back to the Water Planning Council. I don't know. I mean, back to the Watershed Lands Group at this point. Don't we have a pretty good document with suggestions in front of the advisory group? I don't know what kind of – I would make a motion that the advisory group handle it from here. I could – Karen, is that what you have in mind?
My motion was going to be that I would move that the advisory group forward the report as written with the changes or the small modifications made today to the Water Planning Council for their consideration. Now, if we want to go, that would be the first motion, and I would move it on that, and then we move on to another, or if there are any specific recommendations in the report that certain people would like to give priority to or extra emphasis on to the Water Planning Council. But right now, I would just move that the report as submitted, let me see if I get the right, got to get the right title here, on the... Siting of renewable energy projects on source water lands, primary focus solar energy. Final format, I believe it says January 15th, 2021. January 15th, 2021, be forwarded to the Water Planning Council for their review.
Is there a second?
I would second and propose possibly a friendly amendment. So my friendly amendment, if people are uncomfortable with immediately forwarding it, would be Karen's motion, plus as with edits are relevant changes or appropriate changes as suggested by the WPCAG. If you want to leave it open for a little more discussion as opposed to just sending along the document we looked at today.
I thought, Karen, you qualified that there were some of the changes that we had discussed.
Yes, I had. Okay. With comments and suggested changes made today.
Oh, sorry, Karen. Oh, okay. But they have to be made today? Okay, made today, and then would it be circulated or... Anyway, I'm fine with that.
Yeah, I don't think there were, Alicia, I'm fine with that. There were clarifications made today. I don't think there were any major changes to the report. There were clarifications and you can say amendments and clarifications.
Yes, that sounds great. So Margaret, do you have a second without the amendment? Or
I will second it without any friendly or even hostile amendment.
All right.
No amendment.
Since we're many of us are on mute, Water Planning Advisory Group members, if anyone abstains, please say so.
I will abstain because I have not had a chance to read this carefully.
Okay. So Virginia abstains. Anyone else? Does anybody oppose? So I am going to take any lack of abstentions and opposition to be an aye.
Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. So now moving on to the source water protection proposal. That was a link in the agenda that Bruce sent around. Was everyone able to access that considering Bruce's discovery that when he posts a document, in some places the links are broken? Was everyone able to? Nope, that's not what I wanted. Sorry, I'm trying to find the document. Has everyone had a chance to look at it? Oh, I'm having a hard time finding the document now. Hold on a second. Nope. That's why I'm having a hard time. I brought it up and I closed it. Sorry. It's going to take me a minute to bring that up. It keeps bringing me back to this is not supposed to be that. Hold on a second. I apologize. That's because the link goes to the wrong thing. Sorry, folks. All right, this is the last straw, and then I'm not going to make you guys do this anymore. Nope, I can't bring it up. I'm sorry. I'm not sure what's going on and why I can't bring up the proposal. But did everybody have a chance to take a look at the proposal that was sent out with the agenda?
Yes.
Are there any, Denise, do you want to just give an overview of the proposal, and perhaps we can also continue the conversation about any overlap between the Watershed Lands Group and the Source Water Protection Group? Denise, you're on mute.
My goodness, that is the 2020 habit, right? I think we'd be all learned by now. So I've been involved with Source Water Protection for a while, and I'm working on several major projects with Source Water Protection. One of the issues that has come up, and hopefully I outlined the challenges, I think, with Source Water Protection, is that people don't understand the terminology that is in the Safe Drinking Water Act. And actually, one of the things in our that has come up as in the state water plan was folks not understanding the Safe Drinking Water Act versus the Clean Water Act and different responsibilities. So this term source water protection gets, you know, talked about, you know, sometimes inappropriately or not understanding what our dear colleagues at the Department of Public Health are dealing with when we're talking about source water protection, and what our water utility folks are talking about when they talk about source water protection, because they are charged with this task as well, and have to have it as part of their drinking water supply plans, that they will have a source water protection plan. And originally, a lot of work was focused on lands that the water utilities own, class one and class two lands, but we know it extends beyond that to all lands that are in public drinking water supply watersheds. So there's dollars that are being allocated into source water protection, and we need to be looking at how do we support the Department of Public Health in this effort. The GC3 report, the Governor's Council on Climate Change report, specifically talk about the challenges with drinking water supplies from drought, from emerging contaminants, from including things that are somewhat going to be driven by climate, such as algal blooms, expansion of invasive aquatics like hydrilla. So there's some real challenges with source water protection. And we can't allow the Department of Public Health to take on this responsibility all by themselves. And similarly, our water utilities, everyone involved with water management needs to be involved in source water protection. And I do understand that we have waters outside of source water protection that are really important. And those have actually been getting the bulk of monies in terms of protecting either correcting problems in terms of water and or, protecting water resources. And I'll just give you an example. Almost all of the 319, the non-point source section of the Clean Water Act, talks about spending dollars primarily for impaired watersheds. And water utilities and public drinking water supplies were not necessarily looked at as impaired watersheds. Indeed, most of them are not on the impaired watershed list, although that's changing. There was a whole emphasis on delisting impaired waters and not protecting drinking water supplies. Similarly, with the 319, we also have all of the work, and this year, $30 million going to Long Island Sound to protect the watersheds going into Long Island Sound. And one of the things we've been talking about is looking at this as one water. How do we could prioritize work for the Long Island Sound by also prioritizing work in public drinking water supply watersheds, so that we're both protecting Long Island Sound and from nutrient loading and some of the challenges that are also impacting our public drinking water supplies. So I started thinking about this. And one of the things I realized as we were talking at the Watershed Lands group was that everyone didn't understand source water protection and that we needed to have a group that talked about source water protection. I also understood, and when the report came out, what the charge of the Working Lands group was. So the idea is, do we look at, you know, that group taking on this, or do we have a separate group on source water protection, even though there's certainly an overlap? If the Working Lands group, Watershed Lands group, wants to look at this energy and the siting council and take that on as a very specific task, I think that that would be fine. I'm looking at a source water group that, as the charge I put here, is to review source water protection in Connecticut, looking at the roles of the Water Planning Council agencies. What's the role of each of these agencies in source water protection, and identify ways that we can advance this. So the idea is looking at what do we have in terms of federal and state programs. Do we know that people understand the difference between the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act? And how do we make sure that we're moving down this one track? You know, at the same time, when I was putting this together at the Water Planning Council Advisory Group at our last meeting, I also looked at what the State Water Plan Implementation Work Group had in its charge. And there's a whole host of things in the State Water Plan that need to be implemented. Looking at public water supply lands, looking at low impact development, looking at stormwater management and non-point sources of pollution. So there's a whole host of things that are in there that could be just focused on all watersheds in Connecticut, as Alicia has alluded to, and this isn't to take away from that, but also we could have this group look at, okay, let's just talk about source water protection and what needs to go here. There's a lot of impetus nationally on this, but I think there's an urgency with the challenges we're having with drought, with the challenges we're having with climate change and the potential impacts on our drinking water supply watershed, that there's an urgency to do this in public drinking water supply watersheds, particularly from the contamination perspective of cyanobacteria and cyanotoxins, as well as the threat of new invasive species like hydrilla. And then, of course, put those on top of the whole idea of these droughts that we're experiencing, and will they be getting worse, and do we know how to tackle them? So that was my thought process in terms of having this group. I think just some of the discussion we had today, it emphasizes that we're not all on the same page when we're using the terminology, and we need to be, just to support the Department of Public Health and understand the Safe Drinking Water Act and what that is asking them to do. And as I said in some of, and as I had iterated it before, DEEP has tools in its toolbox that could support the work of the Department of Public Health, as well as municipal regulations, as well as things like the Siting Council. And then OPM, in terms of being in charge of our plan of conservation and development, and the role that they play from a planning perspective in working with regional planning agencies and working on public water supplies. So there's a whole host of activities that take place when you're talking about source water protection that overlap in these agencies. And that, and I'm looking at, although I did the charge small and in one sentence, the reason I did all these bullet points is these are some of the things that we could look at in terms of, okay, we need to figure out what's going on here and how do we move forward with source water protection and make sure that we're looking at, again, things like the GC3, but also the state water plan, also the integrated water resources report, and a host of other reports in how we can better do source water protection in our state. So that's kind of my argument for doing this. I know it's something that, Lori Matthew and her group is really looking at. And I, you know, don't have a thought on whether this should be, you know, under the watershed lands group or not, or if you need to form another committee, or if it's a matter of merging the two committees or expanding the committee so that there's more people in it who want to be working on source water protection. You know, however we you know, there's a discussion that can happen there. And I don't think we might have a recommendation out of this group, but even if we don't, I think bringing the discussion forward to the Water Planning Council is an important one. So that's my thoughts.
Comments, questions for Denise?
This is not a question, but a comment. Can I go ahead?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So I'm looking, I feel a little bit like a broken record, but being public and being on the board of the Environmental Advisory Council for the City of New Haven, we are struggling with pollution prevention and contamination prevention. And I'm wondering the other side of source water protection could be pollution prevention. And for example, you know, there's the big picture, the sound, our watersheds, and then there's the local picture, just like my neighbors using pesticides. Now we found out that they're PFAS and everything. So is there a way to tie this that the local municipality or local city doesn't have to, I don't have to fight with my neighbors, tell them, please don't use pesticides. So I would really love to get support from DPH and DEEP around that when there is consensus around pollutants and contaminants. Some we have control, many we don't. So just like if we could contain contaminants and pollutants at the source before they even get to the watershed. I don't know if that makes sense, but I would love to get support. Our board would love to get support around this, so we won't have to be the ones who preach not to use contaminants, but we'll have some kind of umbrella organization or some kind of support from DPH and DEEP.
Alicia, do you want me to answer that? Yeah. So from a source water protection, it wouldn't talk. We would be focusing on drinking water supply watersheds. And so not the bigger issue of watershed management. That said, there are several initiatives statewide that are looking at that, including the 319 program and which DEEP runs, as well as the EPA Long Island Sound Water, you know, Long Island Sound Study, which has a lot of impetus the same way and is looking and developing parameters for most of our watersheds. So as I had indicated before, actually most of our work has been on impaired watersheds. And there is a new focus. I know that on urban watersheds, meaning watersheds in cities and what folks are doing on the lands there, there's initiatives that several environmental organizations are doing that you could join in on that have to do with pesticide use, such as some of the work that Lou Birch, who serves on the implementation work group, the State Water Plan Implementation Work Group, his group is doing some work on pesticides. So I wouldn't say it would focus on pesticides generally, but it may focus on them within public drinking water supply watersheds. But one of the things that is a challenge for us when we're talking about source water protection is often the communities where the drinking water supply watersheds are located are not the communities that are drinking the water. So for example, in Bridgeport, the whole city of Bridgeport is drinking water that where the reservoirs are located in Easton and Weston. And so there's a disconnect between where the watersheds are and what has to happen in those watersheds to protect the land and the people who are drinking it. So that, and it's one of the challenges of source water protection is people don't see it as urgent because they assume that the water utilities are just taking care of it. But the water utilities don't own 80% of the land where the water supply is. So that's one of the challenges. I remember working on public drinking water supply with MDC in the city of Hartford, and the small town of Heartland, which was a community of 4,000 people that does not, has very, very limited resources. And you'd say like, okay, so there's 4,000 people, there's not a lot of resources. But for example, if they're going to site, and we'll pick on the utilities, if they were gonna all of a sudden have a major utility for, let's say, solar siting there, this community has no way to fight that, and it could be impacting the drinking water supply for everybody who is served by MDC, which is all of Hartford and a whole host of surrounding communities. But a lot of people wouldn't even know enough to be fighting that installation if it impacted water quality. So, you know, and I'm not saying everything does. Depends on how it, you know, how it's done. But the point being is that there's, you know, one of the challenges of source water protection is there's a disconnect between the community that's drinking the water and where the water needs to be protected. And so we're relying on these very local communities, a lot of times not with as much sophisticated land use staff because they're small, and, you know, there's some real challenges. But then we also have water utilities that have water supplies that are in more urban areas. So, for example, the Farm River in the Brantford-Guilford area, it's a very urbanized watershed. So trying, but it's also the drinking water supply watershed. So trying to get people to understand all of the land uses that are in that particular watershed and how it impacts their drinking water supply is a challenge. So there's unique challenges to every drinking water supply in the state, and sometimes people understand it. The interesting thing, just to give you an example, in the Farm River, is there's a Farm River Estuary Committee. The folks were very concerned about the estuary going into Long Island Sound and where how the river meets there, and something like you've brought up, you know, that's really important to them. They're concerned about the water going into the watershed and that, you know, it's impacting the beach and it's impacting things like that. So, and it is, but it's interesting that they are in the process of just learning like, oh, but upstream is if we protect the whole Farm and River, not just the lower estuary, we're also protecting our public drinking water supply. And there was a disconnect between the folks who were protecting the estuary section of the Farm River and the water utility that needed to protect the upside of the river. And now there's a whole watershed planning effort that's bringing all of those groups together. So I'm just pointing out that it's a subset of watershed planning focusing on source water protection, our drinking water supply watersheds, but it's a really critical one because, you know, something in the order of 77% or 80% of the people in Connecticut are served by the public drinking water supply watersheds. So, and so we're talking about a lot of people who are impacted if all of a sudden we started having severe cyanotoxin blooms in some of these watersheds, and we know that we're starting to see them. It's not, this isn't like we might have them. This is about that we're already starting to see algal blooms, and it's a matter of, you know, are they going to expand until they're toxic blooms? And it's more about when than if. So these are some of the urgency of source water protection.
So considering it's 3:20, I just wanted to focus on, I think what the question we have at hand here is, you know, there is quite a bit of overlap between the watershed lands groups and this charge as a mission, and whether we want to create a separate group or sort of create to have this developed as a topic underneath the watershed lands group to carry out some of these things. And a question that I have is, how is this work any different than what the source water protection group that DVH puts together might do. Just, you know, doing a check to make sure that, you know, any duplication isn't happening.
So I think you're right. You know, there's the whole discussion, and I think we've already heard it about the watershed lands and the way that their charge is, it could easily, you know, be expanded to include source water protection and utilize that terminology. And I have to say, if we're talking about watershed lands, we really, you know, it should be source water protection group. We should, 12 years ago, we weren't talking about it that way, but I think it would help. The reason that the Water Planning Council may want to, just like we have the Watershed Lands Group, so that's already doing it, but our, you know, we're not seeing the connection between the Water Planning Council, the Water Planning Council Advisory Group, and the Source Water Collaborative. How many people, raise your hands if you know that there's a Source Water Collaborative in Connecticut? You know, because we're seeing a disconnect. There are some water utilities that are involved, most aren't. What I'm seeing is DPH is working extremely hard to do all this work on source water protection, but the focus I would see of this group is to break down the side. DPH can't put a source water collaborative together and break down the silos. The Water Planning Council Advisory Group could be charged with focusing on what are the roles of all these agencies and what is their role in source water protection? What are they doing for source water protection within all of the things that they work on? So, for example, how is source water protection put into the integrated water resources report? Is it even mentioned?
So are you proposing something along the lines of a white paper to sort of bring all this together in one place?
Yeah, and that's the only reason. I actually think that you could charge them with developing a white paper and basically say, what are we not doing for source water protection? And what's the role of the Water Planning Council in source water protection? And so kind of, if you will, kind of breaking down some of those silos or exploring what silos need to be, you know, what are the opportunities? What are the barriers? Why are we not doing this? And I think some of those things we've been talking about and what the Watershed Lands Group uncovered, it's like, why would the Siting Council have reference to the aquifer protection areas and not to drinking water supply watersheds, for example?
I think the idea of put together a white paper is an excellent idea, and that could both summarize the existing efforts and their coordination or lack thereof. It would also then become the blueprint for further work focusing on aspects of that. But I think that it would be a very good starting place. And so I would like to propose that the Water Planning Council Advisory Group, put together a group to create a white paper doing the overview of this. I don't want to repeat what I just said, but I would make that proposal.
Is that a motion?
Yeah, I'll make that as a motion. The Water Planning Council Advisory Group put together a group to develop a white paper on source water protection.
I'll second it. I was just clarifying if it was a motion. Sorry.
All right. Is there any further discussion?
Does a motion like that to have to say we ask the Water Planning Council to approve? Can an advisory group put together its own subgroup, or does it have to be approved and approved by the Water Planning Council?
You're right, Karen. I misspoke. I would propose let me amend the motion or change the motion to be that I move that we recommend to the Water Planning Council that the advisory group create a work group to develop a white paper on source water protection.
I'll still second.
Thanks, Dan. Is there any further discussion?
I think that's a great solution.
I will take any abstentions and and they and make an assumption that anybody that didn't abstain or say nay is in favor based on our technology right now.
Aye.
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 So we will make that recommendation to the Water Planning Council at their next meeting. Is there any is there any new business that we missed? All right. Is there any public comment? Make sure nobody's trying to talk on mute. I can't, well, here, let me stop sharing so I can see my Brady Bunch screen. Oh, there's so few of us left. okay, so the next advisory group meeting is February 16th. The next Water Planning Council meeting is February 2nd. And the next implementation work group meeting is February 9th. I will take a motion to adjourn if there is no public comment or any other items of business.
Make the motion to adjourn.
Second.
All right. Josh, can you stay on for a minute after?
Sure.
Okay. Other than that, have a good rest of your Tuesday and have a good rest of your week.
Thank you.
Alicia, this is Bruce. Remember to turn off your recording.
Oh, yes. Thank you, Bruce.
Take care.
All right.